We only see the cartoons that make it onto the editorial page. There are, of course, a lot that don't. Some may be tasteless, some too obvious or too obscure, but some are rejected because they're too controversial. David Wallace has assembled almost 100 from some of the best-known names in the business in a new collection called Killed Cartoons, Casualties from the War on Free Expression. And we'd like to hear from you. Where do you draw the line on editorial cartoons? Should there be one? Are cartoons subject to the same editorial guidelines as text? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Also, what's the most persuasive editorial cartoon you can remember? You can email us, talk@npr.org. Also, comment on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. If you want to see some examples of killed cartoons, we published 3 of them on our website. That's at npr.org/talk. David Wallace joins us now from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program today.
And it's nice to be here, Neil. Thank you.
Just to give people an idea of what we're talking about, one of the killed cartoons is called Unwise Halloween Costumes. Can you describe it for us?
It's one of my favorite cartoons, yes. There's a scene, it was killed, I think, by the Chapel Hill paper, and it shows different types of costumes, such as a little anthrax box and twin towers with a couple wearing a twin towers costume, and the guy is wearing a beanie, and on the beanie is a little airplane that goes around, and the woman has a plane that crashed into her chest.
Mm-hmm.
And another was a jihadist, and these were Unwise Halloween costumes. Now, it has to be put into context because this was an October 2001 cartoon. I could understand on September 12th maybe not running it in New York. However,
six weeks later, yeah.
It's even more interesting than that.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was in Chapel Hill, the local authorities had decided that the annual Halloween street party was going to there's going to be a security crackdown, as if it was an Al-Qaeda target. So I think that cartoon really did a wonderful job of sending up a stupid policy, and that's what cartoonists are meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if it offends, so be it.
If it offends, so be it. You do write in your introduction, the point is reasonable motives sometimes inspire editors to kill. The world changes so fast, a political cartoon drawn today may seem dated tomorrow, and a signing art director suddenly leaves a magazine. A successor wants to work with illustrators for whom he or she is familiar, and sometimes mm-hmm. a promising idea just doesn't work on paper. The drawing or the writing falls flat. The whole thrust of the cartoon is lost. Editors do, after all, play an important role in journalism. You then proceed to skewer the editor for the next, 200-odd pages.
They got a page.
They got a paragraph.
That's enough. The editors get their due every day, and they made their ultimate statement when they killed these cartoons, many of them incredibly compelling, many of them remarkably innocuous. I mean, I think it's important to distinguish, though, between self-censorship and prudishness,
mm-hmm.
both of which are chronicled in killed cartoons. I mean, I consider the killing of cartoons for taste reasons by nanny-like editors more like misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, self-censorship, which is really suppression of editorial art because it proved controversial or it upset advertisers or it irked powerful interests or it disagreed with editorial policy, those are the felonies, in my opinion.
Well, you may have convicted us of a misdemeanor. We asked you which of these cartoons you would suggest that we put on the website we could talk about. One of them you suggested was one called Congressional Bipartisanship by Paul Conrad that was killed
yes.
by the Los Angeles Times in 1999. Remember then, this was the era of the Republican majorities in both houses of Congress, and it shows a Republican elephant sexually assaulting a rather startled Democratic donkey. And our editors here decided, no, we're not going to put that on our website.
And that was a mistake, Neil.
It's a funny cartoon. I'm not sure it's a mistake. There is an issue, and you cite this repeatedly in your book. Kids look at these cartoons. It's often cited, and you say,
protect
wait a minute.
The children, right, Neil?
Protect the children. Well, kids do look at cartoons. Kids are not going to read an editorial before the age of probably 35 or so, but they do look at the cartoons.
We live in a Sopranos culture, and newspapers and magazines and arguably NPR are stuck to some extent in an Ozzie and Harriet culture.
And it's our job to move the culture forward?
That's right. Yes, we're the educators. We're the tastemakers. We should stop taking polls to find out what readers are going to be offended by. And we should push the envelope a little more and compete with the internet better.
The internet. Now, a lot of cartoons are also published on the internet, where, of course, you can find that cartoon, which we wouldn't publish on our website, would pass.
You'll find it
easily.
On mine.
You'll find it on yours. Okay, you can go find it on your website. So, but and there's a lot worse that's easily available to
now.
To
can
children.
I just say something about that Conrad cartoon before
sure.
we just dismiss it? That Conrad cartoon, which shows a Wild Kingdom romp, admittedly, also came at a time when the Republicans were preaching bipartisanship at the same time they were impeaching Bill Clinton, and that hypocrisy, that is what a cartoonist must go after. That's their job brief, to rock the boat, to point out hypocrisy. And yes, you're right. There are some images we don't want in our daily newspaper. They call it the breakfast test.
Mm-hmm.
And when you open up your paper during breakfast time, do eggs over easy suddenly go down hard? I mean, that's really the question that editors ask. What I would just argue is that they're being too nanny-ish. And they need to push the envelope a little more. Now, what's interesting is sometimes a cartoon that's done for that's killed for taste reasons also ends up being more of a felony, more of a self-censorship felony. I had a cartoon from 1998 by Rex Babin, who was at the time he was with the Albany Times Union, and now that image shows a man. Labeled Big Tobacco, he's labeled, and he's tearing up a paper marked Settlement. And the caption reads, "We're through talking," but the caption emanates from a pretty well-drawn tracheotomy hole in the man's throat. And that image proved too graphic for Babin's editor, but it's certainly a fine example where that decision, for taste reasons, deprived editors of a frank depiction of Big Tobacco's malfeasance.
And I forget which particular cartoonist you quote saying this, but it is my job, he said, I believe it was a he, to slap the reader across the face in the morning.
I don't remember who said that, but I argue that it's the cartoonist's job to poke readers in the eyes. They need a wake-up call, and the cartoonist, more than perhaps any member of a newspaper staff, is the flamethrower. He's the bomb thrower. And yes, we must protect the bomb thrower more, arguably more, than our print journalists who opine for 1,000 words.
You also say that this has traditionally been a progressive craft.
Oh, indeed. Cartoonists, for whatever reason, maybe because they're against powerful interests, they tend to be more progressive. And I think after 9/11, you mentioned the cartoon. A funny cartoon about 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
There were certainly a lot of cartoons that aren't so funny about our role in, for instance, Iraq and the world that were spiked. And when the media, in my opinion, took a right turn. And well, we don't have a government-controlled press, except of course for Fox. But clearly, the administration's disdain for the press has sent a message. That's been felt in our nation's newsrooms, and I could catalog, you know, the numerous
and you
ways.
Do.
Yeah,
you do.
There's a host of ways that, I mean, even FEMA blocked reporters from the boats rescuing people after Katrina. The Defense Department prohibited the press from taking photos of coffins of soldiers. They revoked the press passes of two embedded journalists who dared to photograph Humvees that were damaged by Iraqi insurgents. I mean, there's been an overt hostility by the administration to a free press, and I think that filters down to some extent. And clearly, cartoonists have traditionally been a progressive voice in the media, and I think they received increased scrutiny in recent years from newspaper editors and magazine editors.
Let's get some callers in on this conversation. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guest, David Wallace, his new book is Killed Cartoons, Casualties from the War on Free Expression. And let's begin with Scott. Scott's calling us from Riverside, California.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
This is not exactly political cartoons, but it's probably one of the spiritual father of all political cartoonists, Walt Kelly. And I would like your comment on his development of a character during the McCarthy hearings of a Joseph McCarthy-type cartoon character.
Simple J. Malarkey.
Which aroused the ire of many a publisher, and one of them in the South threatened to cancel his syndicated column if, in fact, McCarthy's caricature ever appeared in the column again.
And we'll get you your answer off the air because I think there's a truck backing up next to you.
The next day, the caricature showed up with a brown paper bag over its head. The publisher said touche and let the column run. I'd like a comment.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Scott.
It was a very important cartoon. There were two cartoonists during the 50s and 60s who really added to the anti-McCarthy movement, spearheaded and more famously by Edward R. Murrow. And that was Herb Bloch of the Washington Post, who coined the term McCarthyism, and Walt Kelly, who introduced the character Simple J. Malarkey, who was a snarling bobcat, looked just like Joe McCarthy. And these two cartoonists did, I think, a great deal to change public opinion, really, about McCarthy's ways. Mm. And you know, Herb Bloch in the 50s, early 50s, it was really important. In 52, he did a lot of cartoons during the Eisenhower election that basically took Eisenhower to task for not policing Republicans, including Richard Nixon and McCarthy. And the publisher of the Washington Post spiked those cartoons, and eventually, because Herb Bloch had a syndication deal, they started appearing in other places all around the country. And this proved to be a huge embarrassment for the Washington Post. And after that, they gave Herb Bloch far more freedom, maybe the most freedom of any modern cartoonist working today. And he ultimately, besides all of his Pulitzer Prizes for his cartoons, he won a Pulitzer Prize for the team effort by the Washington Post in the Watergate years. Mm. And so we can make a case. We really can see with Walt Kelly, with Herb Bloch, the power of imagery.
We're talking with David Wallace. His new book is Killed Cartoons, Casualties from the War on Free Expression. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Don. Don calling us from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I love this subject because we're very fortunate in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to have Doug Marlette now on the staff of the Tulsa World here, and he is the Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist. And recently there have been two cartoons. He says, of course, that what his cartoons do is express opinions, for which he does not need to apologize, but the cartoons are designed to make people think. And two of his recent cartoons, which I think made this point very clearly, one that had a Grim Reaper who had his sickle into the earth in Virginia, where the Virginia Tech deals were, and commented on round and round the world goes. And so where it stops, pointing out the randomness of disasters like that while we were busy trying very hard to blame it on somebody. And the second one was a cartoon showing an NBC announcer bragging about the fact that they fired Don Imus for these comments that he'd made, whereas at the same time on the screens all around the announcer are shots of the videotape of the person who killed the people in Virginia Tech with his guns in the air, pointing out the hypocrisy on the one hand of bragging about firing Imus, but on the other hand, broadcasting these videotape, which of course would have been precisely what the person who shot all those people wanted, and ignoring how it might affect the people that were survivors from that.
Thanks for that, Don. Doug Marlette, prominently featured in your book, Bill.
Well, yes and no. I think it would be only fair that I tell you that my publisher objected to one of the cartoons in my very own book, and it was a Marlette image, and this was during the Muhammad controversy. And despite the
Danish
fact
cartoons,
that,
yeah.
Yes, there was 12. There were 12 cartoons featuring the likeness of the Prophet Muhammad that created a firestorm of riots throughout the world, and very few newspapers in this country would reprint the cartoons. But earlier, Doug Marlette had done a cartoon that asked the question, what would Muhammad drive? And the answer was basically a Ryder truck strapped with a nuke. And this was, you know, it was a hot cartoon. It was killed by the Tallahassee Democrat after a huge protest by Muslims. And I think it was pretty much organized by a group called CARE, which I don't remember what the acronym stands for, but they don't care much about free speech, that's for sure. And so what happened was I tried to reprint that cartoon in the book, and my own publisher would not allow me to run that cartoon. And I fought for it, and I lost, and that's what sometimes happens. And it's a perfect example of what happens when, you know, people get nervous. I think there was a great fear of fatwa in this country, in the newsrooms of this country, and unfortunately in the publishing houses as well.
End with this email from Darlene. The two cartoon favorites she cites, a cartoon of Ronald Reagan in a crack house, sleeve rolled up, arm tied off, vein bulging, ready to inject himself with a miniature nuclear warhead, caption, "Just Say No." And second was an Oliphant, I believe she says, cartoon of the Concorde as a bird, caption, "Droop snooted money sucker." And they were published, they will not make it to Killed Cartoons, casualties from the war on free expression. David Wallace, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
David Wallace joined us from our bureau in New York. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.